Welcome back to 20-somethings podcast. I am your host, Sarah Birch, and it is another beautiful day to be barely surviving in your 20s. Cheers to that. A little ASMR here, guys. Did you enjoy that? I'll try not to like slurp and swallow. That's what she said. Anyway, welcome back. It is a beautiful Tuesday morning.
What, Dad?
I'm such a bitch. What? Sorry, my dad is teetering around in the back, living life in his condo, and I should not be such a brat, but I'm just going to record this episode super quickly, and then I'm going to head on over to meet up with my sister and her best friend, Julia, who both have perfect little baby angels, and I'm going to get all the baby snuggles. Then I'm going to dance tonight. So I wanted to get this episode out ASAP because I just wanted to like roll off the hype of the Toronto vlogs. So if you guys haven't seen part one and part two of my Toronto extravaganza, it's on YouTube. Just search my name, Sarah Birch. And while you're there, there's a little thing called a subscribe button. And if you watch without subscribing, that's like kind of fucked up. Like, no, not actually. But guys, help a girl out. Everybody and their mom is on YouTube nowadays. It is hard to get real traction and like stand out above the rest, but those vlogs are super entertaining, I think, and like just good vibes. So if you enjoy those or any of my other videos or my podcast or whatever, I would really, really appreciate it if you subscribed on YouTube and liked, shared, all of that stuff. Yeah, so I hope you enjoyed that. I'm just going to talk very, very briefly, as promised in that vlog, about my Toronto experience, just in a little bit more detail, kind of like how I felt leaving and the peaks and valleys, the rose and thorns of the experience. So if you're not into that, I guess you can just fast forward a little bit to the part where we actually talk about sadness, SSRIs, anxiety, depression. Fun topic today, but I did promise I was going to talk about this because I actually did really want to have like a more serious episode coming out, something just more, I don't know, like this is a hard time of year for a lot of people. The holidays, the winter, the darkness. I know I've been feeling quite depressed the last few months. I think a lot of that does have to do with like the breakup I went through and just a lot of things. But I know my anxiety and my depression has been kind of bubbling back up lately. And I'm sure a lot of other people feel like they're in the same boat. So I wanted to get into that discussion, and we will get there in just a second. So if you want to fast forward to that, go ahead if you're not interested in hearing about Toronto. But let's start the episode off on a light note, shall we? So I only went for like 2 days. And if you want to like see, you know, the outfits I wore and yada, 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 you can either follow me on Instagram or you can watch the vlogs. But I think the reason I really wanted to go, A, was to see some of my best friends who live there. I also saw my friend Elise, but she unfortunately didn't make it into the vlog. By the time she only showed up for one night, she's super busy. And by the time she came, like we were all pretty drunk. And like, I was like quite a little grump this weekend, to be quite honest. And I was like scaring away the men left, right, and center. And I was like, am I just acting this way because I'm like overtired or because I'm like still not over my breakup, which I'm not, like I'm not fully over the guy from England that I talked about. I shouldn't say that. What if he's watching? I'm totally over you. Well, I don't know how to explain it, but basically like he was going to come here, as I explained in one of my previous podcasts, my story time one. And he was going to move here. And, you know, I had plans in my head of like taking him to Toronto and like just doing, like we went to the football match, me and all my friends, the England versus France. And like we went to listen to the live music. And like these were just kind of things I had planned in my head to do with him when he got here. And so I think there was some part of me that was like grappling with that on the trip. So I think that was part of the reason I was grumpy. Another reason I think is like some people in Toronto, no offense guys, are just like rude and think that they're better than everyone else and kind of stick up their nose. Like the amount of people who looked at me with pity in their eyes when I said I was from Kingston, like, but yeah, there's definitely a stigma around Toronto that like a stereotype that they, the six or whatever, it's like this idea, mentality that like Toronto is the best city on earth. And if you're not from Toronto, then like, what are you doing? And it is a great city for sure. Like there's so many people, so much to do, but it's just too much for me. And that was the realization I really came to at the end of the trip. Like when I was driving in, you know, I was appreciating the city. It's beautiful. It's busy. There's like, you know, I was making all those jokes like, oh, bright lights. I can't talk today. Sorry, guys. I'm like still recovering from this weekend. I was like, bright lights, big city. And I did mean that. But at the same time, I was like, I could not live here. I mean, I've always kind of known I don't want to live there because I've had so many opportunities over the last like 5 years to move to Toronto. Like it's literally 2 hours down the road. I have family who lives there. I have friends who live there. Like, and I've just never felt inclined to go there or to move there. And even when I go visit, I'm there for like 2 or 3 days and I'm like, get me out of here. I think it's just too big. I think it's too fast paced. And now that I have a dog, like I just don't fully see Darla enjoying it there. I don't know. I just wasn't feeling super inspired, but I am going to go back more often just for like weekends away. I have a car, like I have people who are willing to help out with Darla. I don't see a reason why I shouldn't be making more effort to like go out there, visit friends, party, meet people, and then like come back to my little safe haven. So I'm going to go out for New Year's Eve to Toronto. But yeah, so that was overall, my vibe leaving was I was relieved to go, and I had spent way too much money and I got no sleep, but it was worth it. I had a really fun time both nights, but I was like a little grumpy, and I was feeling quite anxious. I think part of that probably was how much I was drinking. If you have anxiety, which actually this like ties into our episode today, you'll understand that like it does not help when you drink. So yeah, that was weird. I really like ripped this poor young boy to shreds at the first club or the first bar. I was like dancing on the dance floor with my friend Elise. Like we were just living our lives looking sexy as hell. And this young boy with like floppy curly hair and an unbuttoned white shirt that was wrinkled came up to us. It was like, okay, so first of all, like the song Calabria was coming on. I know if you guys don't know that song, you're too young to be listening to my podcast. Seriously, like exit out now, but it's like Calabria 2000 or something like that. And it was like a huge song when I was in maybe elementary school. I can't quite remember, but it was like, work that run that you saw me from. Da, 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 da. And I don't know the lyrics and I'm going to probably offend someone if I try to say the lyrics because I don't know them. And anyway, so that came on and I was like popping my ass, right? Like love that song. It was like one of the first like proper club songs that I can remember anyway. And so this guy's like, what is this song? And I'm like, you don't know Calabria? What? And he's like, no, I've never heard this in my life. So then I was like, how old are you? He's like, 22. I'm like, oh, that explains it. You're a bebe. You're a little bebe. And then he was like, well, how old are you? And I guess I kind of started it, but like, never age shame a woman. Are you fucking dumb? Like, and I said, 26. And he's like, oh, you're way too old to be here. Because I guess this bar is like traditionally more of like a student bar. But there was this special band playing that night that my friend really wanted to see. So that's why we went. And there was like so many different ages there. There really were. Anyway, and I'm like, oh, okay. Well, we're both 26. So I don't really know what to tell you. And then he was like, yeah, I can't believe you're here. Like you, I can't believe you're 26 or whatever. And then he was like trying to hit on us after. And I'm like, bro, don't you come trying to like slide back in here after you just insulted my age to my face. Like maybe I was, see, this is what I'm saying. I think I was just like being like really touchy. Like it really wasn't that big of a deal and I made it into a big deal. But I just wasn't like into him anyway. And he just set me off on the wrong foot. And then he was like, can I come sit with you guys? And I literally was like, no. Hannah and Elise were cackling because I'm literally such a savage when it comes to boys that I'm not interested in, especially when I'm drinking. Like, and I was drinking gin and that makes me extra spicy. So I was like, no. He's like, why not? I'm like, because we don't want you to sit with us. Like literally Regina George or Gretchen. You can't sit with us. And then he's like, oh, okay. Like I see how it is. And I'm like, honestly, like, it's not personal. Just, like, we're just catching up as friends and we're leaving in, like, 5 minutes. So, like, you should really probably just go back to your group, which is, like, so savage, but it was hilarious. And he just walked off and he took the L. And I probably could have been a bit nicer, but I don't know. Like, it just reminded me of that very juvenile energy of, like, insulting a woman in some way or, like, making her feel, like, teasing her and then, like, coming and trying to flirt with her. It's like, just, why can't men just be nice to women? I'm going to dig myself a hole because I'm not really that nice to them, but, like, they started it. Anyway, so that was the first night. Slept on an air mattress that deflated by me. It was my own fault. I was trying to inflate it further, and then I put the thingy the wrong way because it was one of the electric ones, and it completely deflated, and it was the middle of the night, and so then I, like, tried to lie down on it, and then I basically hit the ground. It was that deflated, so then I had to reinflate it, and it was so loud. And I was staying at my friend's house, and she has just a small apartment. I mean, it's a beautiful apartment, but it's, like, relatively small, and I was so embarrassed, but, like, I couldn't sleep on the floor. So yeah, that was just chaotic. Anyway, the second day we went to the France and England game. And when I tell you guys, I walked in there and I was like, honey, I'm home, because it felt like the UK. And that was an interesting moment for me. Like, the only part of the weekend where I felt, like, really happy and really at home was when I was in, like, an English bar surrounded by English people. Like, everyone had their jerseys on and everyone was speaking in accents. There was sexy men everywhere. And I'm just walking through, like, bam, bam, bam. I was a bit nervous at first because it was, like, 11 a.m. and everyone was drinking, and I was not down to drink at that point. But eventually I warmed up and introduced myself to people and, like, started drinking and relaxing, and it was so much fun. Unfortunately, England lost, or fortunately, I don't know, whatever side of the coin you fall on. I personally didn't really care. For the sake of, like, the bar and every poor man in there, I was like, hopefully they win, but I had a feeling they weren't going to, because I know France is a very strong team. But yeah, anyway, I was too busy, like, flirting with the guys to pay attention to the game. But it was a really fun, memorable experience, and I'm super glad I went. Like, the atmosphere in there was just crazy, and people were eating and drinking and standing on tables, and it was wild. It was so much fun. And then I met two guys who were both very cute but very different. And they both seemed to take, like, a little bit of a liking to me, which was fine. And I was just getting to know them. And then I invited them both to the party we were having later that evening. And I'm just was being a little, like, tease, because I don't know, I'm single and I'm in Toronto and I'm having fun. So I was like, well, boys, because they're like, oh, we may not come, we may come. I was like, boys, I'm wearing a slutty red dress tonight. So I don't know if that sways your opinion or sways your choice. And they're like, okay, we'll be there. And I was like, okay. And, like, I wore a gorgeous red dress from House of CB. It's on my Instagram if you want to see it. And it did the trick. And I texted them and I said, the dress is on. And then they, like, pulled up and they walked in. They're like, damn, that's a dress. Like, you look hot. And I'm like, thank you. And we were all just having fun. There was, like, 10 people there. We were pre-drinking. And all night I was like, which one do I go for? Like, option A, option B. If a man was talking like this, he'd be canceled. But anyway, actually, no, he wouldn't. He probably wouldn't. I feel like Andrew Tate or someone talks like this all the time, and he still has a platform. But yeah, it was innocent enough. Like, I was just like, I kind of like them both, and they're both cute. So, like, we'll just see what happens. And one guy just stood out above the rest because he just had, like, he was just more into me, I think, like, talking to me more, making more of an effort, like, being a little cheekier. And that's really all it took. Like, the other guy just was being a little more shy, and I think he is a bit shy, and just, like, wasn't really making an effort to talk to me. So I kind of just was like, okay, it is what it is. And so later on, me and that one guy made out at the bar, and that was cute. He was a cute guy. Nothing, like, came of it, which is fine. I just had a fun night and met some new people. But then he disappeared into the night, like, literally was at the bar and lost him. But I didn't really care because I hung out with my brother and we had a blast. As you guys probably saw in the vlog, we were pretty drunk, but we had so much fun. And Nick was very unwell the next morning. We had to, like, drag him to the brunch place. And I met a few more of his friends at the brunch place. We had a really good time. And then I drove home and it was a rough drive. Like, the weather was bad. I was exhausted. Like, I felt like I was going to fall asleep at the wheel. So I had to stop and get a coffee and whatever. Anyway, I'm back now and I'm recuperating. I feel like I've lost my voice a little bit. I don't know if you can hear it. And I probably will get sick. Like, I'd be shocked if I didn't get sick just based on, like, how many people I met and, like, how I was out in the cold, like, walking around drunk all night. I'm glad I went. It was not super nice on the wallet. But, like, you can't get those memories back, and you can make money back. So no regrets. And thank you to everybody who hosted me and met me and kissed me. You're appreciated. Thank you for getting me a little bit out of my slump. She's still slumping a little bit, as you can tell by my horrible posture, but she's wiggling her way out of the slump. Anyway, now onto our depressing topic. We are going to chat a little bit about anxiety, depression, and SSRI. So if any of those things are something that you're... Sorry, I hit the microphone. If any of those things are something you're not down to hear about right now, that is fine. I totally get it. Like, some days it's easier to have these discussions and hear these things than others, but I'm going to take, like, a very optimistic, lighthearted approach, like, as I always try to do. I'm going to talk a little bit about SSRIs in general and statistics and whatnot. I didn't do a crazy amount of research, but I did enough research to be able to potentially educate you a little bit on this if this is something you're not sure, like, maybe you don't even know what SSRIs are. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my personal experience, and feel free to let me know in the comments or DM me or whatever if you feel the same way, if you've experienced a similar thing. And yeah, so let's get started. Let me open my document. All right, so just a quick fact and figure to get us started. So this is from cdc.gov. something, maybe .uk. Fuck. I'll cite below so I don't get, like, copyrighted or in trouble for something. So it's basically says, I think this statistic is for Americans, but, like, it's all, like, just take it all with a grain of salt. Like, it gives you a general idea. So about 1 in every 6 adults will have depression at some time in their life. Depression affects about 16 million American adults every year. And I think by adults, they're referring to people 18 and over. So anyone can get depressed, and depression can happen to anyone at any age for any reason. Like, it's not race related or age related or where you, like, I'm sure there's certain places that have a higher depression rate than others for whatever reason, for the weather, for the, that's the only thing I can think of, because weather makes me very depressed. And I feel like depression was quite big in the UK, like, quite a big issue there, and, like, an epidemic, really. And the suicide rates are quite high as well in the UK. And I do think part of that has to do with drinking culture and also the weather. Sunshine cannot be overlooked. Heat and warmth cannot be overlooked. But essentially, anyone is susceptible to either being depressed or having moments of depression, like, days, weeks, months. It doesn't always, like, come into your life and then that's it, you're depressed forever. For a lot of people, myself included, I have, like, bouts of depression. Luckily for me, I'm still at that stage for the most part, probably with the help of my SSRIs, where I can, like, at least retain the knowledge that, like, I will come out of it and things will get better. And whenever this has happened to me in the past, which it has many times, where I feel like my world is caving in on me or nothing's going my way, everything has eventually worked out, and, like, a new opportunity has come, a new love interest has come. Like, you know, when one door closes, another opens. And this year has been really rough for me, and I am going to talk about that in one of my next episodes, like a 2022 year roundup. It's been a rough year of, like, a lot of doors slammed in my face, like, a lot of lost opportunities. And this was the first time I've come quite close to really feeling like giving up and, like, feeling like things are not going to get better. Nothing will work out for me. I'm just going to continuously be disappointed. You know, why should things work out for me? They don't work out for other people, like, whatever. It's been hard this time around, probably because of the weather, to, like, pull myself out of that hole a little bit. but a few things that help are always dance and Darla and family and friends. And I do truly feel for some people who really don't have any hope that things will get better. And it's not enough to say to someone like, oh, just cheer up. Or like, oh, just think positive. Like, you honestly deserve a fucking slap in the face if that's what you're gonna say to someone who's depressed. Like, it's really not that simple. And I know it's hard to know what to say, but if you're gonna say something generalized like that, that's essentially like patronizing that person, then you're being ignorant, to be quite honest. Okay, so the next little bits of information are from betterhelp.com. If you haven't heard of BetterHelp, they are not yet a sponsor of this podcast, but maybe they will be one day. But they have like an online therapy system, and I've heard a lot of other podcasts promote them. So they have a lot of really good resources and explanations of different things on their website if you're curious. So SSRIs, if you're unsure of what it is, I was unsure before. I mean, I knew what an antidepressant was, but an SSRI is like kind of a specific thing. But my mom is a nurse in the mental health field, so she sort of introduced me to the idea of them and told me how common they are and whatever. But it's essentially just a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So that's what the abbreviation stands for. And they are clinically defined as an antidepressant medication which enhances nerve cell functions within the human brain. So this form of medication is given to patients and used to cure, I don't know if cure is probably not the right word, to treat depression and anxiety. And it's not something you can just like order from Amazon. Like, I do order L-theanine and valerian root and like more natural supplements to help with my anxiety, and I just get those at like the pharmacy or Amazon. This, you actually have to be like diagnosed from a doctor and given a prescription from a doctor. So it says, quote, "Unfortunately, many individuals who exhibit symptoms of a depression are simply told to get over it." So that's kind of what I mentioned earlier. In reality, overcoming depression is easier said than done, because this mental health issue wields power to alter the brain chemistry of the afflicted individual, and therefore real help is required. I'm sure if like you've heard of different things over the course of the last few centuries, there's been lobotomies, there's been shock therapy, isolation, medication, a whole bunch of things. So SSRIs, for a lot of people, is a lifesaver because it's not as extreme, obviously, as some of those other things I mentioned that are mostly, like, I think a lot of them are illegal now. This is why I'm hesitant to get, like, too much into my personal experience, because everyone's brains and genetics and mental health is extremely variant and different from the other people around them. So, like, please do not compare yourself to me in a dangerous or negative or harmful way when listening to this. If you want to have a conversation like, oh, I noticed you said you felt that way, I also feel this way, like, that's what this podcast is all about. But please don't go do anything like drastic or call your doctor like, Sarah said that this happened to her and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm just sharing because sharing is caring. But just keep in mind that everybody's very different from one another with this type of discussion. So it says, in the United States, more people struggle with an anxiety disorder than any other mental condition. And just over 19% of the population who are 18 years or older will have an anxiety condition each year. That equates to around 40 million adults who are dealing with severe anxiety disorders. And I'm assuming that that fact, that data, is just derived from people who have gone to doctors and gotten like officially diagnosed. I'm sure there's many more people who are just suffering with anxiety without reporting it to anyone or having it be logged in some way. So it's an epidemic. I mean, I don't know if I could name more than a few people that I personally know who don't suffer with anxiety. Like, and it's like those people are unicorns. Like, there's some people who are generally just like even keel, happy, content, and don't have like anxiety attacks and don't struggle to get out of bed every day. And I'm like, how? But most people I know have some level of anxiety or depression, especially my age, like in your 20s. And that's why I wanted to get into this today. So among adolescents, it is believed that nearly 32% of adolescents will struggle with anxiety annually. Similarly, around 31% of adults in the U.S. have experienced anxiety disorders at least once in their lifetime. So as I mentioned, this type of thing can come and go. You can take medication for 5 years and then be off for 5 years and then it comes back. Of course, like, things trigger breakups, divorces, losing a pet. Like, there's so many things that trigger mental health in whatever way to go into decline. And so it's natural, like, with the ebb and, it's natural with the ebb and flow in, of life for anxiety or depression to take a stronger hold at certain times than others. I think for the most part, humans want to be happy, right? Like, maybe not even happy, because I think a lot of us know that that's hard to be, like, happy in this fucked up world we live in. But I think at least the majority of us want to be at peace, or at least feel somewhat in control of our lives at the very minimum. So I think most people do what they can to feel better and to get better. But that doesn't mean you're going to stay that way forever. Like, unfortunately, sometimes things just knock the air out of you, and then you kind of have to start from the ground up again. So around the globe, the World Health Organization estimates that 1 in 13 individuals will experience an anxiety disorder, and unfortunately, many do not have access to adequate and affordable care. That's another really good point that, in my biased, privileged mind, I didn't even fully think about before I did some research, is that, like, there are probably so many people in certain countries that are, like, in poverty or underserved in whatever way, who don't have access to proper mental health care, proper medication therapy, or even people in North America who, like, may not have access to the available finances to be able to afford whatever medications they need. I mean, it's not cheap. I am only on my one medication. I take sertraline personally. And it doesn't cost me a leg and an arm, but it's not cheap. And then if you have to buy multiple for whatever reason, like for your children, or maybe you have multiple diagnoses and you need multiple different medications, like, and you're not covered for whatever reason, that's horrible. And unfortunately, mental health is not always taken as seriously in different systems and by different people than, you know, other physical health disorders like diabetes or cancer. Or, but I think declining mental health is truly just as much of a risk as declining physical health, not only as a risk to yourself, but also a risk to the people around you. Like, have you ever heard of a, not to make this, like, super dark and dramatic, but I think it's a valid point. Like, have you ever heard of a serial bomber or, like, a mass shooter who hasn't experienced, like, severe trauma or is very, very mentally deranged or ill or suffering from schizophrenia or whatever it may be? Like, I'm not painting everybody out with the same image at all. Like, there's so many people who have experienced trauma or have mental health disorders who don't go killing a million people. But I'm just saying, like, if you leave someone's mental health unchecked or unrecognized for a long time, then things can go bad really quick. I think as a society, in a global society, but I can speak more so for, like, North America and Canada because that's where I live, but I think the world is not okay. Like, people are just not doing well right now. They're not at their best. They're not being very kind. They're not being very resilient. They're not feeling hopeful. And how can you blame them? Like, the world is burning and dying. The pandemic was extremely terrifying for people. The economy is in recession. So, like, while I do wish everybody was just happy and cheery and we could all get along, I recognize that that we're in a little bit of a hard time right now, like, just the world in general, and especially potentially people in their 20s who are trying to set up their life and buy a house and have kids and get married. And it's like, how do you do that right now? All the media you consume plays a toll on your mental health, all the trauma you've experienced in your past, even things you may not even remember, takes a toll on your mental health. And it's just too much for a lot of people, and I was one of those people. And sometimes you just need a little bit of help, and there's no shame in that. Like, just to be, like, a little bit more clear as to what an SSRI actually does. This says, SSRIs hone in on nerve cells which impact feelings and emotions, also known as neurotransmitters. One neurotransmitter which plays an integral role in the human brain and emotions is known as serotonin. I'm sure you've heard of that word before. Individuals who find themselves afflicted with depression generally have lesser amounts of serotonin in their brains due to an interrupted communications process between brain cells. The SSRIs enter the equation by allowing amounts of serotonin to increase between certain brain cells. Therefore, the mental communication process is no longer blocked. The procedure above also explains the name which SSRI stands for. The purpose of this medication is to surge the amounts of serotonin specifically. The following medications are also designed to provide aid to individuals who have symptoms of mood disorders and anxiety. Can you tell I'm like reading from a script? But I'm not about to ad lib on this type of stuff, guys. Like, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I hope that was like somewhat helpful. So there's different ones that you might be familiar with, or maybe you've heard of. There's citalopram, escitalopram, fluvoxamine, and sertraline. So as I said, I'm on sertraline. I was on citalopram at the beginning, and now I'm on sertraline, and I have changed different dosages and stuff as I've gone, and it's been a journey for me, just like it is for everyone else. So I think now, before I jump into my own personal experience, I do think it's important to just show a slightly different side and a different perspective, because this is a controversial topic amongst people, right, in the medical field and the mental health field. So this is also from BetterHelp.com. So it says, in addition to what many individuals and specialists view as the dangers of selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, so SSRIs, there are also beliefs that not every instance of depression or anxiety should be solved by ingesting pills or medication. Some people have even made the case that prescribing certain treatments merely tackles the symptoms and not the disease. In layman's terms, many people that believe that addressing the reasons behind one's depression is more effective than simply taking medication for the sake of altering one's brain chemistry. So I totally see what this is saying. Like, it's a band-aid in a way, right? Like, for some people. For some people, potentially, meditation could really help. Seeing a therapist could help. More exercise, more sleep. Like, it's a drastic step. Like, it's not something to be taken lightly to start taking a daily medication that's going to change the way your brain functions. Like, that's no small feat. But at the same time, I do think some people just need the extra help. Like, modern science is a miracle. I think it's beautiful that some people are able to live their lives without as much suffering as they were going through before. And I guess I'll segue this into my personal experience. Is like, I was trying everything to make myself feel better. I mean, I think I've had anxiety as long as I can remember, really, to be honest. I think it usually starts around 7 or 8. But it was manifested in different ways as I was growing up, obviously. But I do remember around definitely high school, feeling very anxious and like not wanting to go to school. And like, I would say like my mental health hit the worst of the worst when I went on exchange and went through my first breakup. Like, I had a meeting when I originally went on my SSRIs with a psychotherapist, because you have to be like officially diagnosed. And you know, she was lovely, and we talked for like an hour and a half, and she kind of was like, where do you feel like your mental health took like the two biggest hits? And I was like, the first one is definitely like my parents' divorce when I was 14. That was pretty hard and pretty traumatic, and like changed the way that I viewed the world in a lot of ways. And number two would probably be when I went through my first breakup after living in Ireland, and like that just ruined my life. Like, I'm going to talk about it more in a story time, but I was sure that I was going to marry that boy. I loved him so much. I've never felt a love like that before or since. And when that didn't work out and I never saw him again, I was depressed, very depressed. And I lost a lot of direction and a lot of motivation to like go about my life the way I was before. It's like, I don't want to live the way I was living before without this person in it. You know, it almost felt like a death. So I was telling her that, and I'm like, but I just feel so pathetic. Like, I should have gotten over these things by now. I'm so much older. Like, years have passed and I've done meditation. And guys, like, I was doing all the things. You know, I'm exercising every day. I'm getting outside, I'm socializing, I'm getting lots of sleep, I'm eating well, I'm meditating, I'm seeing a therapist, I'm doing all of the things, and I still feel racked with anxiety all the time. And I was having severe panic attacks like almost every other day type thing. But I just continued to push through when I was living overseas, because I just like was just literally trying to make it like paycheck to paycheck and travel. Like I wasn't overly worried about going to see a doctor and getting an official diagnosis and stuff. But then once COVID happened and I moved home to a small town, living with my mom again, I think a lot of people could relate to this. It's like everything came to a grinding halt, and all these things that I'd been somewhat neglecting to focus on for years like really bubbled to the forefront, and I could not believe how anxious and depressed I was. Like, again, I was doing everything. I was making little YouTube videos. I was exercising with my mom every day. I was taking my dog out for walks, and I mean, lockdown was hard on everyone, but I had panic attacks every single day. Like, I was fighting with my mom. I was fighting with my ex-boyfriend. Like, I was a mess. My mental health was horrible, and my eating disorder got really bad during lockdown. Like, I was not doing well in that area either. So finally, through like the encouragement of my ex-boyfriend and my mom, I told a doctor what I was going through and what I was feeling. And so she recommended me to a psychiatrist who officially diagnosed me with an anxiety disorder and then like a eating disorder. And that was the first time in my life I'd ever been officially diagnosed with those things. I mean, I knew what I was suffering with. I have enough mental health knowledge, like especially through my mom, to know that I had some sort of perverse eating and exercise habits that were not quite healthy and thoughts that weren't quite healthy. And I also knew what anxiety felt like. I knew what a panic attack was. Like, I knew I had anxiety, and I would tell people I had anxiety because I knew I did, but I never had been officially told by a doctor, like, this is what you've been suffering with for years. And it was really, really, really special in a weird way for me to get the clarity that, like, okay, I didn't just like make this all up in my head. This is actually something that a professional doctor, an intelligent, experienced doctor, is telling me, like, you do not deserve to live this way. You do not deserve to suffer. You have a chemical imbalance in your brain cells that is causing you to suffer. And I'm sure all these other factors of life, like social media and your age and relationships and finances, are all contributing. But at the end of the day, Sarah, like, you, because anxiety runs in my family, it's like very much genetic. Everyone in my family pretty much has anxiety or depression on like both sides. She's like, girly, like, it's not your fault. Your cells are imbalanced. And I was just like, oh, so it's not my fault? Which I know sounds kind of silly, but like, honestly, it's so easy to just blame yourself for everything. Like, why can't I be better? Why can't I be happier? Why can't I be more resilient? Like, why do I take things for granted? My life is so great and I still feel so miserable. And then you realize, like, in that moment, that it's not my fault and I don't have to live this way. And so we started on one antidepressant and I felt really good off the bat. Like, but then I realized I was having some weird side effects. I don't want to get like too much into it because it's a bit private, but like in the bedroom, I was having some hard times. I'm sure you can put that together if you know anything about antidepressants, but it wasn't really fitting my lifestyle very well. And as a 23 or 24 year old girl, I don't remember exactly how old I was not willing to sacrifice a good, healthy sex life at that stage in life. Like, I'm never going to be willing to do that, but especially that stage in life, I was like, this is not going to work for me. And in fact, it was making my depression and anxiety worse, because not only was I beating myself up in like a day-to-day life, but I was also like now beating myself up in my intimate personal life. So I was like, this is not going to work. No, 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 no. So I immediately, like after a few months, called my doctor and like advocated for myself. I was like, you need to change this medication because this is not working. Like, I cannot live this way. And she's like, well, you know, no matter what medication you're on, like there's going to be side effects. I'm like, that's probably true, but like, I don't feel right. Does not suit my body. This doesn't feel like me, and I feel numb and I feel detached and I don't want to do. And so I like advocated for myself, and she's like, okay, yeah, yeah, sure. So we tried a different one, and that one was a way better fit, and I've been on that one ever since. And thank God I didn't just like settle. I just really do think it's important to be as in touch with your body and your feelings as you can, and to like make changes if something's not serving you, and to not always take every single doctor's word as law. Doctors are not demigods. They don't know everything about everything. Like sometimes they don't know the inner workings of your brain and mind and body all the time. So like this doctor was relatively understanding and changed my medication around. But I'm just saying, in any aspect of your mental health, like if someone's just trying to tell you, oh, it's probably just this, or it's probably just that, or it'll pass, and you know something's wrong, like don't let them convince you that they know more about you than you know. And you don't have to settle for less. Like fortunately, we live in a world now in a society where there are so many medical resources and like such an advancement in medical science and technology. So it's like there probably is the perfect fit out there for you, whether it be more of the modern medicine route or more of like the natural medicine route. There's probably the perfect solution for you out there. You just sometimes have to go through trial and error. And that's kind of what I had to do. And I'm glad that I did. I'm glad I didn't just settle for the first medication they gave me and just hoped for the best. Like I knew right off the bat pretty much that it wasn't going to work for me. So yeah, like I guess to wrap it up, like overall, I would say my quality of life is a lot better now. And my mental health is on a lot more of an even playing field most of the time. I don't have as many extremes of up and down. I mean, obviously I'm still a woman and I have hormones and everything's a factor. Everything's always going to be a factor, but I didn't necessarily need to live 100% anxiety free. I don't think that's ever going to be an option for me, to be honest, but I wanted to just like get through each day without it being like so exhausting and trying and difficult and like having to like will myself to just like get through the day without having a panic attack. Like, and now I'm there. Like I can bounce back from things a bit quicker. I can take things with more of a grain of salt. I'm sure a lot of that does have to do with like age and just maturing, but in some ways it's frustrating because I do think it has overall like chilled me out a little bit. Like I definitely am more drowsy and fatigued for the most part. Like I do have to take a lot more naps now that I'm on my medication, and I don't get as excited for things. Like I'm very like indifferent about a lot of stuff now, but once I'm there and I'm doing it and I'm like living, I'm good. But I remember it back in the day, like being so excited for like a birthday party, or like so excited to go on a trip or see a person or whatever it was. Like I just would, the highs were high and the lows were low. And now I'm just like more in the middle. And it is frustrating sometimes because I just like don't care that much about things. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll go. But once I'm there, I usually always have a really good time and I'm able to like come alive. But I don't know if anyone else feels that way. I just feel a little bit like desensitized to things now. But I think it's my body like trying to protect me and my brain trying to protect me from like going on this roller coaster of extremes. Yeah, I think it's helped a lot. I have noticed like a few little side effects, specifically like the drowsiness. But overall, I've had a really good experience with it. I don't know if I'll be staying on it forever or like... I am always thinking about different alternatives. I have moments where I do a lot of meditation for a few weeks and I feel amazing, and then I kind of like fall off and I stop doing it because I'm busy or I forget. And so, I don't know, I would love to get to a place one day where I'm not dependent on anything for my mental health. But there's no shame in like needing help and needing a little extra boost. And that's like the moral of the story to me is like, there's such a stigma around mental health and especially around taking prescription medicine or taking antidepressants. Like even I was watching this Criminal Minds episode. I mean, granted this one, I only watched the older seasons, the new seasons are shit, but it was, you know, probably filmed in 2006 or something this season, but they were calling this girl like, oh, we know you take your mental medication because you're so mental or whatever, like, which would never fly nowadays, obviously. But I'm like, this girl was just depressed and she was on antidepressants and they're like, your mental medication. And that's always what I grew up understanding. Like I was so hesitant for years to go on medication because I didn't want to admit that like my suffering was that severe. But you would never bat your eyelashes at someone or like judge someone if they're taking like insulin when they're diabetic, or they're taking Advil if they have a migraine, or if they have like a skin condition and they're putting a certain lotion on their skin to make them feel better. Like for some reason, when it's a mental health thing, it garners a more controversial reaction because people start to look at you differently. And I think that's the main thing I didn't want to happen, was for people to look at me differently. And that's a reason why it took me so long to come out and like talk about my eating disorder, is I didn't want people to start looking at me as like a victim or a sad person or like look at me with pity. But then I was like, the only way people will do that is if I like give them the opportunity to do that. And you guys know me, I am an open book. So I'm like, I straight up like talk to everybody about my anxiety, my eating stuff, my breakups. Like I'm down to talk about it all, because to me, like I know who I am. I know that I am a strong, good, dignified person. And like, if you are going to stamp a label on me because I've suffered with some eating disorders, which is very common, I've suffered with some anxiety disorders, which is very common, like, then you're just ignorant and I don't want you in my life anyway. If you can't see me for the full picture I am and all I have to offer, then like, that's on you. So I don't really judge myself, because, I mean, I guess I do sometimes, but for the most part, I'm pretty forgiving with myself, because it's like, okay, well, I'm not a superhuman and there's so many other people in the world. Like 20% of the population has been diagnosed with the same things I've been diagnosed with, or whatever it is. I literally just read the statistic 2 seconds ago and I can't remember, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to pretend to be any better than anyone else or any worse than anyone else. I'm just a person doing the best I can like everybody else. Like even the other day, like I was just saying to my friend Hannah, like, well, I think Hannah might know I was on antidepressants, but I don't know. Like sometimes I forget which one of my friends knows and which ones don't. Like, and it really doesn't matter to me. Like I straight up was just like, oh, I just need to take my medicine and then I'm good to go or whatever. And she's like, oh, what medicine or whatever. I'm like, oh, my antidepressants. She's like, okay. Like it didn't faze me at all, because I know, I mean, she's a good friend, so I know she's not going to judge, but like, it doesn't have to be this big thing. For me, anyway, it's like I take 2 pills in the morning and I live my life like everybody else, and it doesn't define me. That's just all it is to me. And so I hope if you're not in that place yet, you'll be able to get there. The place of just like not judging yourself and not allowing other people to judge you or put a label on you. Like if you approach something with just like nonchalant energy, like confident, secure, then other people will have no choice but to follow suit. You know what I mean? Even if it's like fake it till you make it, like, and it is shocking to people sometimes, like how open and unapologetic I am about these topics, because it's like almost like society wants you to be ashamed or something, especially as a woman. Like, well, I don't want to make it overly gendered, even though I always do that, but like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, fuck that. I have anxiety. I have an eating disorder. I'm on antidepressants and I'm still Sarah. I'm still talented. I'm still fun. I'm still a good friend. And it's all part of the package that makes me me. So yeah, I guess I just want to leave it on that note, that you are not broken or faulty or failing or any less than anybody else around you. You are just a human being doing your best in an extremely stressful, messed up world. And not only should you have compassion for yourself, but everyone should have compassion for everyone. You know, like we're talking about mental health now. We're talking about these things. So yeah, that's that on that. I hope you enjoyed this episode, even though it was a little all over the place, but I just wanted to share a little bit of that talk and that journey. I've talked in the past like vaguely about my anxiety, but I've never like really gotten into my whole story and like this series of events. But sometimes you don't realize like how much you were suffering until you're able to like take a step back and actually feel better. And you're like, oh God, that was not normal, you know? And unfortunately, when you live a certain way for years, like you kind of just think that that's normal and that everyone maybe feels that way deep down or whatever. And then anyway, and comparison is the worst. That's the last thing you should be doing. It is natural to compare. So everybody struggles with their mental health in some way. I hope things get better, but unfortunately with the way the world is going, I think mental health is only going to get worse for the global masses. So just do your best to take care of yourself and take care of the people in your circle who you love, and that's really all you can do. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed me sharing my little story. Again, not sure if this is something that I will be using forever, or if maybe one day things will change for me, or who knows when I have kids, like, who knows, okay? Like, I'm just taking it day by day. But I'm grateful to be feeling overall, I've had a rough few months mentally for sure, but overall in the grand scheme of things, I'm very grateful to be feeling a lot better and a lot more steady and stable and calm now than I did 2, 3, 4 years ago. And even I talk to my friends overseas or whatever, and they're like, you are literally a different person. Like, you just seem so much more secure in yourself. And I'm like, I think a lot of that is just growing up. Like, I want to give myself some credit for maturing and learning and doing a lot of work on myself. But I'm not going to lie, a big part of that is the antidepressants. So I guess that's good that other people have also noticed a positive change as well. So I got to go now. I got to go run some errands and stuff before I teach dance. But thank you so much for listening. You guys know what to do. Follow this podcast on whatever streaming service you're listening to. Rate it 5 stars. Leave a review. Share it with a friend. And if you want to see the video, it's up on YouTube. If you want to check out any of my other videos I've done, like more just like lifestyle vloggy videos, those are also on my YouTube. And I will be back next week with a juicy story time, and then the week after that I believe I'm going to do like a 2022 roundup, so you can look forward to those. And then starting like in the new year, I'll have some more episodes with guests and other people for you guys. It's always a bit of a hassle scheduling recordings and stuff, especially like everybody's sick right now, but I definitely intend to have a few people on the pod in the new year. Yeah, okay. So looking forward to 2023. It really cannot get worse than 2022. Knock on wood. And arrivederci. Sayonara. Au revoir. Bonsoir. How many ways can I say goodbye?